It's nice to be with you. It's always nice to come to Inner Leaving. Normally a slightly smaller crowd than this down the stairs. And I have to say at this very moment in time, I think I'd prefer the smaller crowd down the stairs. But it's nice to be here, and we do trust that God will bless our time of conference this afternoon. We're approaching, I suppose, the finish line of the ministry marathon that we enjoy at this time every year. And just three more preachers to listen to, just one more pie to consume, and then it will all be over for another year, I suppose. And although you maybe wouldn't like to admit it, perhaps some of you are beginning to suffer a little bit from spiritual indigestion. Maybe you've had so much ministry over these last few days that you're just beginning to wonder how much more you can actually consume and how much more you can actually digest and take in. Well, with that in mind, I want to bring you something very simple and very practical this afternoon. We're going to turn to the Acts of the Apostles and chapter 9. The book of the Acts and chapter 9. This, of course, is the chapter where we read about the dramatic conversion of Saul of Tarsus. That's not what we're going to speak about this afternoon. We're going to look at the end of the chapter, perhaps the lesser known part of Acts chapter 9, the lesser spoken on part, and we're going to think about an equally interesting character that we encounter at the end of this chapter. So we're going to read from verse 36 onwards. Now there was at Joppa a certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and alms deeds which she did. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died, whom when they had washed, they laid her in an upper chamber. And forasmuch as Lydda was nigh to Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him two men, desiring him that he would not delay to come to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber, and all the widows stood by him weeping, and showing the coats and garments which Dorcas made while she was with them. But Peter put them all forth, and kneeled down and prayed, and turning him to the body, said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up, and she gave her his hand, and he gave her his hand and lifted her up. And when he had called the saints and widows, presented her alive. And it was known throughout all Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. And we trust that the Lord will give help as we seek to just share a few simple thoughts from this passage this afternoon. You feel your inadequacy and your insufficiency every time you stand on the platform, but particularly when you look out and see as many folks as this, and you think of the responsibility that you have. But we trust that the Lord will help today. Here's a question for you to ponder at the start of the conference this afternoon. How much of an impact did you make in your own community in 2017? How much of an impact did you make in your community in 2017? I don't mean so much as an assembly, collectively, but as an individual, personally. How much of an impact did you make on your community in 2017? What kind of testimony do we have amongst our neighbours, and amongst our colleagues, and amongst our classmates? Because this is the challenge that I really want to bring to you from this little passage this afternoon. As I said, very simple, very practical. And we trust that we'll come across with the challenge to you that it's come across to me as I've thought about these things in the past few days. I want to confront you with the subject of your own personal testimony in your own particular community this afternoon. Because in the few verses that we've read, the Spirit of God shows us by the exceptional example of this wonderful woman, Dorcas or Tabitha, how we can live a life that makes a difference and has a real impact on our communities. And although the details of her life are very limited, what is said about her brings to us a very real challenge for the year ahead. And so I want to think about that this afternoon for a few minutes We're going to think about her community. And we're going to think about her consistency. And then we'll think about her commitment and her compassion. And then we'll briefly think about her crisis. And we'll finally think about her challenge to us today. So there's the little headings. That's where we're going with the study. Her community, her consistency, her commitment, her compassion, her crisis, and her challenge. So you can follow where we're going, and you can tick off the points, and you'll know how long we've got left this afternoon. Let's think first of all about her community. This woman lived in a city called Joppa, a city that was located 30 miles northwest of Jerusalem, which is now known as Jaffa. It's a suburb of Tel Aviv. And if you ever go and visit Israel, which is well worth doing, then perhaps you will fly into Tel Aviv. This lady lived not far from there. It was a busy harbour town back in those days, situated on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. It was the nearest port to Jerusalem, into which materials had been delivered during the construction of the temple in the days of Solomon in 2 Chronicles chapter 2, and also in the days of Zerubbabel in Ezra chapter 3. It was, of course, also the place from which the runaway prophet Jonah tried to sail to Tarshish in an attempt to escape the call of God upon his life in Jonah chapter 1. And due to its location between Azotus and Caesarea, it was probably one of the places that Philip the Evangelist visited back in Acts chapter 8. And so it's a place of significance within the scriptures. I thought it was interesting that while Acts chapter 9 begins with the dramatic conversion of Saul of Tarsus, a man who would eventually travel thousands of miles to take the gospel to countless cities in multiple countries, the chapter ends very differently by introducing us to Dorcas, Tabitha, a woman whose whole life of service, as far as we're aware, it seems, is centred in just one single town. Quite a contrast between the two. And not without significance. You know, they would, of course, engage in very different but equally important lines of service for God. Paul was the prolific public preacher of the word, whilst Dorcas, I suppose, was a powerful personal witness in her community. And as you study through the book of the Acts, you come to realise that it really was a combination of both of these types of activities that contributed to the rapid spread of the gospel in those early days. It wasn't all about the public preaching of the likes of Peter and Philip and Paul, although that was very, very significant, of course it was. But it was also down to the personal witness of what we might call more ordinary believers, as they went everywhere, living out the reality of their faith, showing kindness to others around them, and sharing the good news with their neighbours. It seems that having introduced the extraordinary international evangelist in the first part of the chapter, now the Spirit of God now wants to give us a little insight into the impact that a more ordinary believer had in their own local community. And that's really the burden of my heart today. And it's a simple burden that's been put upon my heart to speak about this subject. The importance of our own personal testimony in our own local community. The question is, as I've said already, what impact are you and I having in our own communities? Amongst those that we work with, amongst those that we study with, amongst those that we live with. And if the answer is, as I suspect it is for many of us, very little impact, the next question is, do we really have a desire to do something about that? And begin to really make a difference to the people that the Lord has placed us amongst? Because it's no accident that we are where we are in terms of our place of study, our place of employment, or our place of residence. It's no accident that you are where you are. I hope you believe that. I hope that you believe that you are there for a reason and for a purpose, to be a witness to the Lord, to be an ambassador for Christ. You know, in Acts chapter 8 and verse 4, we read that the Christians in Jerusalem, they were scattered as a result of the persecution. And we've come to realise that the little word scattered has the idea of being specifically and strategically sown into various towns and cities throughout the land by God to be his witnesses there. And in every place that those early believers found themselves, they had an impact. They made a difference. People looked on and said, these are the folks who have turned the world upside down. I wonder if they say that about us, in our communities. Are we having an impact? Are we making a difference? The Lord wants us to have that impact, doesn't he? In the communities where he's placed us. You see, your village, your town, your city is a mission field, isn't it? Your school, college or university is a mission field. Your office or your shop or your factory is a mission field in itself. And here's the important thing, you're the missionary. Maybe you never really thought about it like that before. Maybe you thought missionaries were these folks that go off to South Africa and other places like that. But every one of you are missionaries in your own communities. And so when you shuffle into the office on a Monday morning, you're not just going into your work, you're going into your mission field. Mm. When you students drag yourselves out of bed to make it to that 11 o'clock class, you're not just going to your place of study, you're going into your mission field. And when each one of us take our journey back to where we came from at the end of this conference, and we turn the corner into our street, we're not just going home, we're going into our mission field. I wonder if you've ever really seen things like that before, because every one of us really should have that missionary mindset as we think about the people that we live amongst and work amongst and study amongst day by day. Paul says in Romans 10, doesn't he? How shall they hear without a preacher? You know, what about the people around us? What about these folks that we have responsibility for in terms of showing kindness to and taking an interest in and sharing the gospel with? How shall they hear without a preacher? It seems to me that this woman, Dorcas, was a woman who had that outlook on life and who set about reaching those around her in whatever way she possibly could. And in her own simple way, this woman became a wonderful channel of blessing to the thirsty hearts and the hungry souls of the city of Joppa. An ordinary woman with an outstanding testimony. You know, wouldn't you like to have that written over your life? Just an ordinary person, but with an outstanding testimony. You know, we don't know her family background, we don't know her age, her spiritual experience, her social standing, her marital status. There's nothing really mentioned about her to suggest that any one of us couldn't have the same impact on our community today. But I want us to notice three reasons this afternoon why Dorcas made such an impact on our community. And these are absolutely vital for us to grasp today as well. We're going to notice in the next three points of the message, her consistency of life. That was the foundation to her testimony in the town, her consistency of life. Secondly, her commitment to Christ. And thirdly, her compassion for others. And if you and I are going to have an effective personal testimony in 2018, these three things will be absolutely vital to us as well. Notice, first of all, her consistency of life. This lady was one of several characters in the New Testament who possessed two names, due to the multicultural society in which she lived. Tabitha was her Aramaic name, and Dorcas was her Greek name. And both of the names really mean the same thing. They both mean a gazelle or an antelope, slightly unusual name. But when you think of the antelope, you're thinking of a graceful but energetic creature, aren't you? One which was much admired in the East back in those days, hence why it was a name often given to baby girls. And apparently it was a great compliment back in those days to tell a woman that she had the eyes of, or eyes like an antelope. So I'll just leave that one with you. And ladies, if anyone ever tells you you've got eyes like an antelope, just remember it's meant to be a compliment. But of course in the Bible, names often represent character, don't they? And throughout the scriptures we encounter some individuals who dramatically failed to live up to their names. And then we encounter other characters whose lives wonderfully consistent with the character that their name suggested. And it seems from the little that we know of this woman, Dorcas, that she was one such woman. Her nature matched her name. Simple point, isn't it? But her nature matched her name. She was a graceful woman who was energetic in the service of God. But not only did she live up to the name of Dorcas or Tabitha, she also, much more importantly, lived up to the name of Christ. For she was marked by a beautifully Christ-like character. And so as she sought to serve Christ there in Joppa, there was a clear consistency about her life. That was the foundation of her testimony in the town. And of course, the challenge for us today is whether we as Christians live up to our name, Christ's ones. Christ's ones. Because those who believe in Christ, those who belong to Christ, ought also to behave like Christ. We've got to live up to the name. Christ-likeness is the ultimate goal of Christianity. It's the ultimate gauge of Christianity as well, isn't it? It's the measuring stick by how we measure our progress in spiritual things, Christ-likeness. And there should be that consistency between our name and our nature, between our beliefs and our behaviour. And I wonder if there is that in our lives today. It's vital that we walk worthy of the calling by which we've been called, as Paul puts it in Ephesians 4. We've got to realise that the people around us, in the school class, in the college and university class, the people in the workplace, in our neighbourhoods, are scrutinising our lives day by day. Whether we like it or not, they are. And they expect a higher standard of living from those who claim to be Christians. Again, whether we like it or not, they do. They don't expect us to behave the way that they behave. They expect a higher standard of living. They expect us to be different, just as the Lord himself expects us to be different. And Paul writes, doesn't he, in Romans 12, be not conformed to this world. Don't let the world squeeze you into its mould. The crux of Christianity really is, be different. And I wonder, friends, how different we are. How different we are from our classmates and our colleagues and our neighbours. Because if we're going to have an effective personal testimony in our own particular communities, we'll need to be different. And we'll need to live lives consistent with what we claim to be. For example, we can't be going to the prayer meeting on a Wednesday night and rolling out of the pub on a Thursday night. It's inconsistent, isn't it? It's not legalism, it's inconsistency with the Christian life. We can't be singing hymns on a Sunday morning and shouting and swearing in the office on a Monday morning. Because no one will ever take us seriously when there's that kind of inconsistency in our lives. This is simple stuff. I said it was going to be simple. I said it was going to be practical. But these are the kind of things that we need to think about in our day-to-day lives as Christians. And so the foundation of Tabitha's testimony was her consistency of life. But then, on top of that, was her commitment to Christ. I would suggest that this woman was marked by a wholehearted commitment to the Lord. How do we know that? Well, she's introduced to us in verse 36 as a disciple. And not just any old disciple, but a certain disciple. A disciple that the Spirit of God deems particularly worthy of our consideration. It's a phrase that's used three times over in the book of the Acts. We read of a certain disciple named Ananias in chapter 9, verse 10, a certain disciple named Timotheus in chapter 16, verse 1, and here a certain disciple named Tabitha or Dorcas in chapter 9, verse 36. It's interesting, too, that Dorcas is the only female who's specifically described as a disciple in the New Testament. Now, there were many other female disciples in those days. She's the only one who has that title or that description attached to her name specifically. In fact, I understand that the word is in its feminine form, and so Darby in his translation actually says a certain female disciple named Tabitha. The Lord, of course, outlined the demands of discipleship back in Luke chapter 9, didn't he? He says there, if you want to follow me, if you want to come after me, if you want to be my disciple, here's what it's going to entail. Here's what it's going to involve. Here are the requirements, the criteria. Number one, you'll need to deny yourself. It's a life of self-denial. Number two, you'll need to take up your cross It's a life of sacrifice. Number three, you'll need to follow me. It's a life of steadfastly following the Lord. In other words, the life of a disciple is a life of wholehearted commitment to Christ. And the question, I suppose, is, are our lives marked by that kind of commitment to Christ? You know, the fact that the Spirit of God specifically, and in a sense uniquely, describes Dorcas as a certain female disciple suggests to us that this was a woman fulfilling the demands of discipleship in her life day by day. I wonder if we are. I wonder if our lives are characterized by the features of discipleship. I wonder if our lives are characterized by wholehearted commitment to Christ. Are we really giving him our best? I suppose that's the real challenge, isn't it? Are we really giving him our best? I wonder how committed we were as Christians as we look back over 2017. As we think of the basic elements of Christian living, I wonder how committed we were to reading God's Word. I wonder how committed we were to spending time in prayer. I wonder how committed we were to attending the assembly gatherings, to supporting the assembly's activities. As we reflect on a year that's now slipped by, wouldn't it be good if we were all that little bit more committed to these basic things of Christianity in the year that lies ahead? You see, commitment to Christ is vitally important in terms of our testimony before others. And you say, well, why is that? I can understand that commitment to Christ is important generally, but why is it important for our testimony? Because the people we live beside, the people we work beside, need to see that Christianity is something that is actually important to us. It's not just a hobby or a pastime or a once a week thing. It's our life. It's our life. To me, to live is Christ. That's what people need to see in you. That's what people need to see in me. After all, why should we expect others to take an interest in something that we ourselves are half-hearted about? Why should we expect anybody to come along to our gospel meetings if for the rest of the week, when they see us, we are completely half-hearted about the thing ourselves? It's only when people see that we are committed to Christ and that he is everything to us that they'll begin to think seriously about him for themselves. And so, on top of her consistency of life was her commitment to Christ. But then on top of that was her compassion for others. You know, it's very obvious from what's written about this woman that her heart was burning with the same compassion for others as Christ's was. You know, there never was a more compassionate heart than the heart of Christ. There never was a person who had more of a care and a concern and an interest in others than Christ. And this woman's Christ-like character exhibits that same compassion for others. Notice the expression of her compassion. The second part of verse 36 is a glowing testimony to this wonderful woman. And it really explains how her Christ-like compassion was expressed to those around her. It says of her, this woman was full of good works and alms deeds, or acts of kindness, which she did. The New Testament really has a lot to say about the subject of good works, doesn't it? Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9 are perhaps the verse that immediately springs to mind as we think about works. And it's a negative one, actually. It tells us there about the powerlessness of good works to bring salvation. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourself, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And we often refer to that in the gospel, and rightly so. But the following verse, verse 10, is equally important, isn't it? Because there we have not so much now the powerlessness of good works to bring salvation, but the presumption of good works as a result of salvation. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works. And so Paul is very clear, isn't he, that while good works are not the foundation of salvation, they are most certainly the fruit of salvation, yes, in our lives. And so there is this expectation, there is this presumption that believers will exhibit good works in their lives. I wonder how much good works and acts of kindness there are in your life. Yeah, Titus chapter 2 verse 14 tells us that we should have a passion for good works, because Christ gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works, enthusiastic about good works, passionate about good works. And in the very same epistle, chapter 3 verse 8, Paul highlights the need for perseverance in good works, when he encourages the believers to maintain good works. This is something that should characterize our lives day by day, something we have to continue in, something that's to be an ongoing thing in our lives. Across in Matthew 5, the Lord himself explained the very purpose of good works. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And I suppose here in Acts 9, in the life of Dorcas, we have a beautiful picture of good works and their impact on others. I suppose she was the New Testament equivalent of that virtuous woman of Proverbs 31, who extends her hand to the poor and reaches out her hand to the needy. And of course, as we've said, she was merely following in the footsteps of Christ himself. Acts 10 verse 38 says of him that he went about doing good. And we read in the Gospels of various occasions when he was moved with compassion, when he saw the need of men and women around him. We're exhorted across in the Epistle of Jude as well, aren't we, to have compassion, making a difference. And that's what Dorcas did in Joppa. She had compassion on others, and as a result, she made a difference in her community. She knew the needs of her neighbours. She took a personal interest in their lives. She made it her mission to find simple and practical ways in which she could demonstrate the love of God towards them. It wasn't really complicated what she did, was it? It wasn't something that's beyond any one of us to do. Just to identify the needs of our neighbours, the people around her, and to take a personal interest in their lives, and to make it our mission in very simple and practical ways to reach out and show them something of the love of God. You know, people's needs are our opportunities, aren't they? And as Christians, we should be known for our care and for our kindness in the communities in which we live. No. The psalmist once wrote, didn't he, "No man cares for my soul." That's how he felt. The people of Joppa could never say that whilst Dorcas lived amongst them, because by her actions she proved time and time again how much she really cared for them. What about the people who live and study and work alongside us? Can they see by our actions that we have a real interest in their lives? And do they really know that we actually care about their souls? The expression of her compassion was through her good works and acts of kindness. You'll notice too the extent of her compassion. The verse says that she was full of good works. Phillips in his translation says she was a woman whose whole life was full of good and kindly actions. Luke uses this expression, full of, on several occasions in his writings, really to describe something that overwhelmingly characterises certain individuals. I suppose it's an expression that we still use today from time to time. Last week I was full of the cold. You can maybe still hear it a little bit in my voice. My mother used to tell me when I was younger that I was full of nonsense. Sometimes she still does. And so we still use that phrase every now and again. And Luke uses it from time to time in his writings. He uses it sometimes in a positive sense. He speaks of certain folk who are full of grace and full of faith. And other occasions he uses it in a negative sense. Individuals who are full of subtlety and full of evil and full of envy. But here's a woman whose life is full of good works and alms deeds. A woman whose life was overflowingly and overwhelmingly characterised by kindness. No wonder she had such a powerful testimony in her community. And don't miss the little phrase at the end of verse 36 as well. Good works and alms deeds, which she did. And that's an important, significant little phrase in itself as well, isn't it? She didn't just think about doing good to others. She didn't just talk about being kind to her neighbours. She actually did it. And there's a lot to be said for that. You know, maybe at the start of last year, you made some great plans as to things you were going to do for the Lord in 2017. Maybe as you were sitting in this conference last year, you were thinking to yourself about all the great things you were going to do. And perhaps as you look back now, over a year that's gone, you have to confess that while you thought about them, and while you talked about them, you never quite got around to actually doing them. And in many ways, that is the story of our lives, isn't it? We've got great ideas of what we're going to do, but sometimes in the busyness of life, we just never quite get around to doing them. I wonder if 2018 will be the same as that. We've all got great thoughts of what we're going to do for God while we sit in conferences, but are we going to put these plans into practice? That's the real test of it, isn't it? What we do when we leave these conferences at New Year, how it affects our life in the year ahead. Are we going to be like Dorcas, a woman who was full of good works and acts of kindness, which she did? And then notice also the example, or a example, of her compassion. We learn in verse 39 that one of the groups who benefited from her kindness was the town's widows. They, I suppose, were the most needy members of society in those days. There was no social care or government aid as we have today, and they were often exploited in their desperate circumstances. They had no status or support in society, but they did have a special place in the heart of God. And as such, they had a special place in the heart of this dear woman. James chapter 1 verse 27 says, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and keep himself unspotted from the world." It's a reminder of the importance, the requirement upon us to reach out to those in need in our communities. And we learn that that was one of the things that this woman did. We learn in this passage that one of the simple, practical ways in which she showed kindness to these widows was to provide clothing to them. And it appears from verse 39 that she actually made these garments herself. She invested her money, she invested her time for the benefit of others. And with her needle and thread, Tabitha weaved herself a testimony in the town. And she embroidered her name onto the page of Holy Scripture. And she made eternal investments in the bank of heaven through the currency of kindness here on earth. You know, the currency of kindness goes a long way, doesn't it? I was with a small assembly in another part of Scotland for gospel meetings last year. And there was an elderly lady there, in her 90s. And I didn't hear this from her, but from someone else in the assembly. Every week, for several decades, this woman has distributed her home baking to folks in the community. That was her way of simply showing a little bit of kindness to the people around her. And you say, well, that's not really what Christianity is all about, is it? Well, I know it's not the sum total of what Christianity is all about. But you know, it was amazing. The number of houses that I came to in that little village where people spoke very highly of that dear lady and her kindness to them over the years. Her little acts of kindness had made a difference, had made an impact in that community. And our good works will undoubtedly benefit our gospel witness in our communities. The two things in many ways go hand in hand. And you find as you move around a little bit that the believers who are most effective in getting folks along to gospel meetings and such like are those who are constantly showing kindness to their own little network of contacts. If we want to be more effective in our gospel witness, maybe we need to be a bit more effective in our good works and acts of kindness in the community as well. John Wesley once said, "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." And you know, friends, there are infinite opportunities for each one of us to do good and to show kindness to people around us. We just need to open our eyes and ask the Lord to direct us in these things. There's so many opportunities. And you might think what you can do is very small. Just remember, little is much when God is in. The old hymn says, "Let none hear you idly saying, there is nothing I can do. While the multitudes are dying and the Master calls for you." There is something for every one of us to do. It might not be making clothes and making cakes. You know, if I tried making clothes and making cakes for my community, it would have a detrimental effect on the testimony. Nobody would want my cakes or my clothes. But there's things that we can all do. There's simple things where we take an interest in the folks' lives. You know, that means a lot to people. There's people in our communities and nobody cares about them. Nobody's got any interest in them. Nobody shows any compassion towards them. Nobody takes any time with them. These simple things make a big difference to folks. And if we just open our eyes, we'll find opportunity after opportunity in our communities today. If you really want to be proactive about making a difference in the year ahead, go home and make a list of all the things that you could do that would bring you into greater contact with the people around you and give you a platform to share the gospel with them in 2018. Here's your homework for the conference this afternoon. But let's think about our crisis just very briefly. You know, the passage takes a very unexpected twist in verse 37, doesn't it? It came to pass in those days that she was sick and died. In those days. It's quite incredible in some ways, isn't it? In the very days when she was doing a great work for God. In the very days when she was making a real impact on her community. In the very days when you'd have thought she'd be granted health and strength to continue on doing what she was doing for the glory of God and for the good of others around her. In the prime of her life, in the midst of her usefulness, in the providence of God, she's taken away from those who had become so reliant upon her, it seems. And we see just how much she was missed as news of her death spreads throughout the community. It's hard to understand, isn't it? It's hard to understand why some are plunged into serious illness and others are taken home to heaven when they're at their busiest, doing their best for the Lord. And we can all think of examples of that, I'm sure. And maybe the hymn writer has got it right. Further along, we'll know all about it. And further along, we'll understand why. And all we can really do is repeat the words of Job. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, blessed be the name of the Lord. I'm not going to go into the details of the account, but I just want to notice that on this particular occasion, the seeming tragedy that took place actually brought about an opportunity that led to the furtherance of her testimony in the community. And as people heard about the miraculous raising of Dorcas from the dead, we're told in verse 42 that many believed. And just a very simple point, that again, I think we know individuals and they've encountered seeming tragedies in their lives. And yet, through those tragedies, the Lord has provided opportunities for the furtherance of their testimony in their own community. And maybe there's some folks here, and maybe you have encountered difficulties and disasters and what you might even call tragedies in recent days or weeks or months. Maybe the Lord will provide opportunities as a result of that, that will go to the furtherance of your testimony in your own local community as well. But I just want to finish with her challenge. And the challenge I want to close with is really found in the final phrase of verse 39. And it's the fact that this woman's testimony was built up while she was with them. While she was with them. You know, James says in his epistle, doesn't he, "For what is your life? It is even a vapour. It appears for a little time and then vanishes away." And friends, we need to realise, don't we, that we've only got a little time. While we are with them, while we are with them, to make an impact on others and to make our mark for God, that little time will soon be up for every one of us. And before we know it, we'll be gone. And our opportunity to make a difference to these people will be over. And well, it wouldn't really be a New Year's conference if someone didn't quote it at some point, so I'll be the one to quote it right at the beginning. And may God just burn these words into our hearts and onto our minds at the outset of a new year. Only one life will soon be passed, and only what's done for Christ will last. Maybe this year we'll go in for what really matters. And maybe as a result this year we will make a difference to the people around us. Dorcas was a woman who made a difference to people's lives while she was with them. And we ask ourselves again, how much of a difference have we made to people's lives in the communities where the Lord has placed us? May God help us all to have a testimony like Tabitha's and to make a real difference to our communities in 2018. May God bless you as you think upon and act upon these things this afternoon.